player development is real, right? It was always this, mythical thing, but now we can quantify it, right? But quantifying it needs to not be based on the results in the lab. It needs to be based on the results on the field.
Hello, and welcome back, or welcome to the Gestalt Performance Podcast. I'm your host, Tyler White. In this interview, we chat with Eugene Bleeker. He is the director of performance and the co-founder of 108 Performance down in sunny Los Angeles, California. Eugene will be one of our speakers here in the upcoming World Pitching Congress here in January. We're super excited to hear him speak. He's always full of fire and energy. This is definitely one you won't want to miss. Eugene Bleeker. Eugene, what's up, my man?
My man, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm actually,
another day in paradise out here.
Dude, it's actually, is it warmer in St. Louis than it is California right now?
I don't know. What's it like in St. Louis?
It was 91 with a heat index of 101.
Yeah, definitely hotter out there. It's probably 84, 85 and sunny.
Struggle.
Man. Not a cloud in the sky. It's tough, man. Southern California.
It is. When it's not on fire, that is.
Yeah. True story.
This is probably the interview I'm most looking forward to, just because I always know our conversations end up pretty exciting. And it's funny because I've had a couple conversations already with people, and every single person was like, yeah, I was talking to Eugene, and then things got out of hand, and we started getting, things got electric and got fiery, and the conversation just kind of got a lot more heated in a good way. And I was like, yep, that's what I'm pumped about sharing with the listeners and getting them to know Eugene Bleeker a little bit.
Well, fire away. What do we got?
Well, let's start with some of the background. I know you're from the East Coast originally. Let me know where you're from.
From Long Island, New York.
There it is. And where'd you play? Where was your kind of upbringing?
I was obsessed with baseball from the time I was young. I went to, started going to an academy when I was seven and spent like all 6 weeks every summer until the time I was 17 and went there for like 10 years, New York Tech Baseball Academy, and, fell in love with it at a young age. My grandfather actually, I got some cool pictures. He had box seats at Yankee Stadium growing up because my great grandfather was the Bronx Borough president and, just been in the family a long time and, always loved the game and grew up loving it. And,
So you're in the exact opposite side of the country right now. What was baseball? How would they compare the two? You got New York baseball to Southern California baseball.
Well, I would say the fan base in New York is pretty intense. The rivalries, the intensity of the fans, the knowledge base of the fans. I would say California definitely way more laid back, but the talent level out here, unbelievable. I originally came out here after my senior year of college when I got hurt and I was trying to sign a free agent contract and, doing the thing, driving around the country and, going to tryouts for about a year and a half. And, one of the things that helped this 5'10 catcher that catch and throw guy that didn't hit realize that coaching was probably the better route was seeing all the 16-year-olds out here that were better than I was. So the talent level out here is just unbelievable.
It's nuts. I mean, you shake a tree and you got 10 guys throwing 95 fallout.
It's crazy. I mean, we see every time people come in here to visit and they see the talent level of the 13, 14-year-olds. I mean, it's nuts. I think we had five guys make the USA teams this year under 15. And, we had a 11-year-old just turned 12 walk in here one time for an eval throwing 81, 82 in his bullpen. Like, you just see crazy stuff.
That's absolutely insane.
It is. But it's a lot of fun, too. You get to see a large cross-section of players with all different movement profiles and you get to try a whole bunch of stuff and, figure out what works and for who and all that. So, it's a huge blessing being out here.
If someone came up and started chatting with you, and they introduced themselves to you, and then they ask, "What do you do? What do you do for a living? How would you describe it? What's your title?"
Gosh, that's a really good question. Sometimes I just say baseball coach. But I would say movement specialist, baseball movement specialist. Working with hitters and pitchers. Because it's all the same. I mean, the good players, man, the engine and the brakes are all the same. So, just baseball movement guy.
Is that like the amazing golf ball whacker
Yeah.
guy? Oh my God. Okay, so along the lines of the engine and the brakes, we're gonna go a little bit more into that because I've heard you talk a lot about that. Who or what are your influences?
Lots of them. I mean, just lots of them. Everybody in this game that has always been pushing it forward. I mean, I would say early on, definitely Ron Wolfworth, Brent Strom, Alan Jager, Bobby Tewksbury, guys that have just been pushing the game forward for a long time, trying to find answers. Lance Wheeler, Paul Maimon.
So how would you describe that group to say the listener is not an in-depth kind of baseball junkie? How would you describe that group? Like that's, we got pitching coaches, hitting coaches, private instructors, we got MLB staffers.
Yeah, forward thinkers, guys who have always tried to push the envelope. And you could extend that list to Kyle Boddie, Randy Sullivan, anybody, you Oster, like anybody that's tried to push the game forward and really try to find answers and truth,
Along those lines, where do you see the industry going?
I see it going a very good direction. Often I feel like the right direction in the wrong way sometimes. There's a amazing documentary called In Search of Greatness that I watched, I don't know, maybe 2 months ago. I saw it on a plane and I was going somewhere and I found it on the little television on the plane, and it was interviewing Pele and Michael Jordan and Wayne Gretzky and David Epstein, the guy who wrote The Sports Gene, and then also Range, that book that just came out not too long ago. And one of the things that he said, and I was furiously taking notes like the first 5 minutes, and then I ended up just, when I got home, I bought it because I was trying to write down everything that was being said. It was so powerful. And one of the quotes was that, right now in sports, we're making things important because we can measure them. We're not measuring them because they're important. And to me, that was really, really powerful statement. I think that, the entrance and rapid integration of data and technology into baseball is an important thing, but at the same time, people are going off the deep end. They're trying to trust in the technology to provide truth and answers. Meanwhile, the technology is, just supposed to be used as a tool like any other to, help determine what is actually happening in front of you. But, there's accuracy issues. There's, is this metric actually important? And that stuff happens a lot, There's a lot of things that are very counterintuitive. Paradoxical, if you will. And that's in life and in baseball, and especially with technology. Sometimes to get somebody to create something, oddly enough, you have to tell them to do the opposite. And we see that a lot with technology, a lot. Which kind of lends to the old school thing. A lot of those guys, they weren't wrong. They were more right than most people realize. They just only had one way to say it. And sometimes to get a guy to do something better, telling him to do specifically that is the worst thing that you can do. So people that are using, say blast motion and focusing on, only early connection with everybody, or, flattening out the barrel just to get a good score on there. There's a lot of things they're not taking into context. Using K-Vest and trying to get everybody with a 1-2-3-4 sequence. Like, no, that's not it. that's just not it. And without full context, you're often doing harm sometimes, rather than good. So
I think that's a big issue we see in the medical community, where so many decisions are in rehab and even surgery are based off of what the research shows, but a lot of times the research isn't what's actually happening. It's in a laboratory setting where the variables are kind of skewed in a way to help you publish more papers. And it's like, is this really what's going on? I don't know.
Yeah, 100%. And then on top of that, the sample groups aren't always the right sample groups, and they're just not taking things into full context. And the rehab in the medical community is a huge problem, in my opinion. Like I used to quote ASMI all the time, and and that's part of what got me started on this whole journey, was starting to read all the all the research. And then at the end of the day, when you really start doing your own research and really using your own views and deductive reasoning and just testing things on your own, you find out a lot of things that are the opposite of the research, and I mean, you can look at GERD as an example, which I talk about often. When guys started to come in with arm injuries and they started to assess glenohumeral internal rotation deficit, they saw all the pitchers that were hurt had it. So they immediately, associated, was causation, correlation. Like they immediately determined that that was, causing factor, but they didn't test any of the healthy guys.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't see that the healthy guys had the same issue, and that it's just a natural adaptation of the human body. They want to do research on pitchers throwing off the mound and saying it's higher stress, off the mound than flat. And, we tested it and saw a lot of guys with higher stress flat than on the mound. So ultimately, all of the results that we produce, whether it's pitching, hitting, velocity, health, spin, direction, consistency of ball strike, like all that relates back to how we move. And, if you have people not taking into context the movement that's creating the data, right, it's very hard to backchain the data to have a true and accurate understanding of what was actually happening. It's a flawed method for sure.
I think the one word you use there, which I've heard a couple times in some of the interviews already, was context. And that's huge, right? You need to get out there and try it yourself. You can't just assume that some, PhD ortho or PT or biomechanist in a lab knows how this body is going to adapt to a certain movement or a certain, whatever. It's a cue. It's a, because their shoulder has this much internal external rotation, but what they can't see is how much spinal range of motion is being compromised because of an adaption, or basically they're trying to compensate elsewhere. They can't tell you that. They can't tell you any of that. And, whenever you see a research article that's, they're looking at one or two particular variables, it's so hard to take that truly into context when the human body has 100 million different variables happening all at once. And to say, hey, this is the case, is hardly ever the case.
Well, what I want to know is, so think of it like this, right? So you got somebody that has they injured their lower back while they're squatting, right? And they have a really poor squat pattern, and they go into the doctor, and doctor says, okay, 3 months off from squatting, or, we're going to do this surgery, and either way, when you rehab back, we're going to do this really good PT program, and that's going to strengthen you back up. And then we're going to get on this workload monitoring program and get you back up. And, everybody, you go through it, right? And your lower back feels better, right? You haven't been squatting for 3 months, and Now you're doing your rehab program and you're monitoring your workload and you feel great and upping the levels and the intensity nice and slow and progressively, right? But ultimately, the reason you got hurt is because you added a bunch of load on a crappy squat pattern. And if you continue to squat the same, eventually your back's going to get hurt again. Like, how do doctors just make the general assumption, having never seen someone actually throw before, that a rehab program combined with effective workload monitoring is going to ultimately make someone healthy if they don't change the faulty pattern in the first place? Like, that is mind-blowing to me why people somehow think that they're just going to be healthy by doing those things without actually changing the way that they throw. And on top of that, if you look at what was I going to say? I lost my train of thought. If you look at I lost it.
We'll get back to it.
I'll get back to
It's
it.
going to hit you in like 10 minutes and then we'll explode into it.
Yeah.
No, that's something that is absolutely positively always addressed, like in our office, is we're going to get you better, we're going to get you moving better, we're going to change your mechanical patterns, but we're also going to check in on your actual sport specific movement patterns. If we're doing something that is causing this stress or this problem, it's probably going to come back if we don't change anything. Now, we can make it to where it might take longer to come back, or we might hurt something else because we're changing our compensation or our brain's point of stabilization. But if we don't change kind of the faulty movements, something is probably going to get reaggravated. So yeah, you're spot on with that.
Yeah, and it makes no sense. Like, I don't understand how people don't see that, and how, the doctors have never seen someone throw, yet they can make those assumptions, and people end up, obviously the injury rates keep going up, not down, and people haven't figured that out. And they look at it in the weight room and they want to equate, throwing to lifting, but nobody's paying attention to, movement.
Yeah. Oh man, movement's so important. I mean, I can't tell you how many people I talk with that like, yeah, strength is important. You need to have some strength and stability in your body, but like you have a much greater chance at learning to move better, more efficiently, and being a better athlete than just lifting more. Like, you know what I mean? I mean, of course you know what I
100%.
mean. I know you agree with that
100%.
term.
I can't. Because we see, 14 and 15 year olds that are in the low 90s and healthy and feel like $1 million, and they don't have half of the strength that, the pro guys that are getting hurt have, right? Like, the strength is giving you the ability to deal with faulty movements better. Like, it's giving you the ability to have a higher stress load. Like, you can have a the stronger you are, the more faulty the pattern can be, and you can get away with it for a longer period of time, right? Like, your back's not going to blow out at 150 pounds. It's going to blow out at 300 pounds, but it's still gonna blow out. Like, if you move better first, right, you're going to put yourself in way better position.
Yep, I agree with you there. Tell us a little bit more about 108 Performance.
Well, we have two facilities in Southern California. We have one in the Inland Empire and one right on the border of Irvine and Tustin, right in the heart of Orange County. We have a partnership with a biomechanics lab called Movement First that's located in Newport Beach, about 10 minutes away from us. We opened up, God, it's going on 5 years. We opened up in October of 2014. With one shop and grown a lot since, man.
What
Just
made you want to open up in Southern California?
well, I was already out here, and I mean, that's the reason I stayed. Like, when I started coaching, the obsession with baseball out here and playing the game and the talent level is just so high. And there's just so much baseball out here and so much passion to play the game, so that's definitely what kept me here for sure,
So working with players, working from, high school, collegiate to professional, having to deal with their coaches, with their parents, with their schedules with playing multiple teams. What do you think is your biggest challenge that you face day to day?
Oh, gosh. You just named all of them. I would say getting people on the same page. Getting people on the same page. So many people still, a player's development in their career should be a collaborative effort between everybody involved. It should be between the private trainers, the on-field coaches, the whole thing should be this, nice integrated system where everybody's in it for, the player's best interest. And too often, if there's any type of conflicting message or something is not communicated well, or a player is, whether he's performing better or struggling at the time, like it's just, it's always a big problem, like they have 10 different people telling them 10 different things, and there isn't a whole lot of clarity, and there isn't a whole lot of integration. And it's the kind of that one at every level of the game, from pro ball all the way down.
You
go from level to level in pro ball, you get a new coach and he's telling you something different than the last guy. You go from JV to varsity, you get a different coach, different coach telling you to do something different. It's hard, and it's mostly hard on, it affects the players more than anything.
Yeah. I mean, that's a lot of cues. That's a lot of mechanical changes. It's a lot of perspective changes. Although you need to learn and grow, like it's a ton.
And, a lot of times they're spending, the players are spending more time trying to please the coaches than they are trying to figure out how to put up better results. Coaches sometimes make it more about, their program than, the players' results. And something I often say is that the only thing you can do wrong as a coach is make everybody do the same thing. If you have everybody doing the same drills, inevitably somebody's not getting better. If you make it more about this is how we're going to do our throwing program, somebody's not getting better. It's not about the products. It's not about the program. All of it works and all of it sucks. It just depends on, who you're using it with, when and why. Pitting guy and, you don't, I understand if you don't feel comfortable with weighted balls yet, but if you don't get comfortable with them and you don't learn how to use them, you're preventing some of your players from figuring out how to be the best version of themselves. If you don't have, a connection ball, if you don't have a core velocity belt, if you don't, like, all that stuff works and it's all used. You don't use it with every single person. You figure out how to, or you use it differently with every single person. Inevitably, all of it again comes back to the movement. And if you give 5 different people the same drill, they're not going to move the same way. If you give 5 different people the same cue, they're not going to move the same way. So how could you possibly expect the same results?
How much do you think ego is the limiting factor in that equation?
I think it's a huge factor in the equation, but I think a lot of it, there's a lot of coaches out there at every level that are really trying to do a good job. And this is it's a tough landscape to navigate at the moment. You have coaches that have been doing it a long time that have had success in different arenas, doing it a certain way. And, a lot of them even realize, okay, like a lot of this stuff works, but, they don't understand it. There's no education around it. They see some players getting better, some getting worse, and, the juice isn't worth the squeeze for them, and they don't have the time to do the research or to educate themselves. It's more of a matter of a lack of education available for coaches and how rapid the game has changed and continues to evolve. And, I started digging in on this stuff about 10 years ago, and a lot of the stuff that people think is new, it's not new. Like, it's new to them. It's new, think about it like this, right? So, when research gets done, how long does it take, right, to trickle down to the masses, right? It takes a long time to get in a textbook and actually trickle down, but it was there and available a long time ago. right? So there's a lot of guys, you know, Randy Sullivan and I were talking about this when I was out visiting him in Tampa. And, you know, we were kind of doing this thing and on top of the research stuff 10 years ago. And there's a lot of stuff that, you know, that we found to initially make sense, but then ultimately to not necessarily be completely accurate and somewhat, you know, I wouldn't say ineffective. I would just say not fully understood. And, you know, you figure out as you go, right? The more you do it and the more you work with players, like what's actually working, what's actually translating, right? So, you know, it's tough. It's a really tough environment for coaches. So I would say there's definitely part of it for some people is ego, but a lot of coaches just, it's just a lack of education, man.
Yeah. So resources that I guess that would be a good segue into the next question. I was going to ask, you know, what resources would you recommend to the listeners, whether it's professional or performance? Doesn't have to be baseball. It can be baseball. What do you feel is something you learn from?
Yeah. I think that depends on the sector you're in, you know, because there's a lot of different resources. I mean, if you're a performance guy, I would highly recommend, you know, reading Franz Bosch's stuff. I would highly recommend reading Serge Grakovetsky, Strength Training and Integrative Approach, Spinal Engine. I would highly recommend, you know, going on Twitter and following Tyler White and Steven Oster and, you know, a bunch of people doing great work in that sector. If you're a pitching guy, highly recommend, you know, following, go look at, again, Oster, look at Ben Brewster's stuff, look at, you know, we try to put out some good stuff on the pitching side, look at Driveline, look at all of it and try to get like a very holistic vantage point rather than just going, you know, all in on it's all about this or it's all about that, because inevitably it's not all about anything except for moving better. And all of those people, you know, Lance Wheeler, Alan Jager, like all of the things that everyone is providing help guys. The best coaches in the game are helping people move better, helping people move more efficiently. Right. Speaking of efficiently, if you're a performance guy looking into Stuart McMillan, it's one of the best resources on the planet as a CEO of Altus. If you're a hitting guy, you know, there's a ton of great resources out there. But people need to figure out, they want it to be easy. They want it to be about a program that they can just put in place, and it's not. It's never easy. So go out and find the people that are having the most success, creating the best results, and, you know, figure out the things that you can take from them that make sense to you, and then challenge them and incorporate them, you know, into your program and see what works and who it's working for. The only way that you're going to figure it out is if you start to try stuff. You can't be scared to try stuff, you know. Inevitably, you know, scarcity mindset rather than a growth mindset is always going to hold you back, you know? So, you know, just start looking at people and try stuff. And that was one of the biggest takeaways for me from Bridge this year. You know, and that's why I love doing that every year and getting on the phone with you and, you know, all the other brilliant people that that we try to talk to on a regular basis, because at Bridge, whether it was, you know, Zach DeCant, one of the best strength guys on the planet for baseball from TCU, whether it was you, Oster, Rick, myself, like everybody was literally saying the same exact thing in a different language.
Mm-hmm.
Like everybody was saying the same thing, right? Like the understanding of it is different because of the different perspectives, but the overarching theme is that everybody's talking about the same stuff, you know?
Yep. You're right on. I mean, in kind of going back to what you were talking about, just gathering a holistic approach towards understanding everything. You're essentially just saying, get as many tools in your tool belt and then understand knowing how to use that particular tool for the whatever task is at hand.
100%. And, you know, like I was saying, like, that's the, I use an example in the book, like, you know, it's like, you know, back in the day, if you were building a house, right, you had a hammer, you had nails, you had a saw, and there was only one way to do it, right? And it was also limiting the amount of houses you could build in a certain amount of time and the amount of designs that you could have, right? Now it's just about building houses faster, more efficiently, bigger, stronger, like, you know, and you have to expand the toolbox.
Yeah. Is someone hammering a vacuum right now? What is going on?
No, that is the guy outside the office right now using the weed whacker.
Oh, yeah, that'll do it. That actually makes sense.
Can you hear me okay still?
I still got you. All right, I'm going to give you a few names. I want you to tell me what they kind of what they mean to you or their significance and how you guys are involved. Brandon Dixon, Jake Mareznick.
Well, hold on one second. Let me see if we get this guy out of here. Willie, could you go ask him to do that somewhere else right now, please? Try to get this guy out of here. Try to tell him to come back. Go to another area.
We'll edit most of this out. That's too good. Did you get him?
We're good.
Oh man, that's amazing. Okay, we'll restart. So I'm gonna give you a few names. I want you to tell me kind of their significance and how your guys are involved in them. So Brandon Dixon, Jake Mareznick, Ryan Court.
Okay, so those are all guys that we've spent quite a bit of time with. Well, Court, it was definitely significantly less time, but you know, those are some players that are currently in the big leagues. All those guys are offensive guys. The first guy that we had was Jake. Started working with him in the off season of 16-17, I believe, and just trying to, you know, overhaul the swing. Some of his buddies in pro ball were coming in at the time, and felt like, you know, he could use, you know, a little help and a little guidance. And, you know, it was, amazing opportunity, getting to work with him. He's just an unbelievable athlete that did not move well at all. He lacked space, he lacked direction, you know, and he didn't understand why, you know, 'cause it's frustrating for guys. Sometimes it's like, you know, they're big leaguers. They know they're talented, but they know they're not producing the way that they could. And, you know, things just don't feel right, you know. And, you know, when you give them an understanding and give them some guidance, you know, amazing things can happen. And, you know, he ended up, after our first off season together, he ended up hitting more home runs in that, you know, his next 200 at bats during the regular season than he did in his previous 1300 in his career. you know, which was pretty amazing. And, you know, his numbers, despite the first half of last year, have been astronomical. And I, you know, won't go into why there. He struggled with, he struggled with a couple things that he was trying to do, that people were, you know, talking to him about, and not necessarily inside the organization, just people were talking to him about, and, that kind of held him back for a short period of time. But, man, when he moves well, you know, he's got the ability to, you know, hit 35 or 40 in a season and win a gold glove. He's just a very special, athlete with a whole lot of potential. And, you know, it'll be amazing to see if he can get himself 500 at bats, you know, what'll actually happen in a full season of him getting regular ABs, you know. Just a very special person with a tremendous potential, if he continues to focus on the right things and get the amount of at bats he needs. Brandon Dixon came in a couple of years ago. I think his was the first offseason, was 17-18 offseason. He was a, you know, career 260 guy, and he was in AAA at the time. And, again, just lacked some understanding, had worked on a couple things that might have, you know, kind of taken him in the wrong direction. And, you know, spent a couple hundred hours with him during the off season, and he ended up hitting 347 the next year and upped his OPS and slugging like a 150 points each before he got called up to the big leagues. And you know, he's got a full season under his belt this year, and he's leading the Tigers, I believe, still in home runs and a couple other categories. You know, so again, tremendous amount of potential and bright future ahead of him. And Ryan Cort's really a pretty amazing story. And, you know, all these go to show the power that, you know, player development really has. You know, Cort was a 31-year-old with, you know, like 3,000 career minor league at-bats, right? And, you know, he was in spring training this year in big league camp and got released, and career was about to be over, and he was going to hang him up. And, you know, one of his old coaches, Randy Dunnett, who has helped him out in the offseason, you know, got him to, you know, hey, give it one more shot, you know, go out and see the guys at 108. I think they can help you. And I did the consult with him over the phone, and, you know, things really made sense to him. And, you know, he came out here. And funny enough, when he came out, I ended up flying out to go work with Dixon before he left and broke camp. And, you know, Joey spent the week with him here. And, you know, Joey did an amazing, amazing job with him just in a week, you know, learning who he was as a learner and what he needed to really focus on. And a lot of it is not even necessarily knowing what the issues are. Those are easier to diagnose. It's figuring out how to get guys to, you know, create better patterns and better movement, especially in such a short window of time. And, you know, he started this year in indie ball, and 2 months later, we flew up to Seattle to go watch his big league debut.
That's amazing.
It's nuts, man. It's nuts.
And Joey, you're referring to Joey Cunha, your hitting coach, your hitting coordinator.
Yep.
Sorry, struggling with words. Yep. Yeah, Joey, he had a really interesting presentation at Bridge the Gap on his whole process, documented it real well. It was really well done. So Joey's a good dude.
Yeah, Joey's a great dude. He has done an unbelievable job since he's been here. He's turning into just an amazing, first of all, he's a first-class human being. He's a first-class person. And, you know, he gets better every single day. I mean, every single day he's been here, he's grown leaps and bounds, and he continues to push himself and everybody around him to do just that. So very blessed to have Joey here. And, you know, all these stories are, you know, regardless of where someone ends up, if you look at the value that's available in player development, you know, whether it's a 35 to a 40 or a 40 to a 50 or a 50 to a 55 or 60, like, you know, those things are worth a lot of money to professional teams, and it changes somebody's entire life. You know, like the power in it is unbelievable. When you can accurately diagnose like a movement issue, right, and focus on giving people what they need rather than what you want to teach them. And you can give them the feelings, you know, it's, and that's the thing, man. It's not that the data is a tool. The technology is a tool. That's not going to fix anything, right? If you ask 10 big leaguers, 10 Hall of Famers, what made them, you know, what their most important, feels or thoughts or drills or, you know, what made them a great hitter, like, you know, they're going to give you a lot of times a feel, right? An internal thing, my top hand or my bottom hand or getting my front foot into the ground or, you know, a drill that they did that when they felt off, you know, made them feel right. Like they might not know what any of the data is or what it means, but they know what it feels like when it's good, you know, and you have to get them to replicate the feelings. You have to give them the drills or the thoughts that are going to create the feel that they need, because that's something you can chase. That's tangible. Right. You can chase a feeling. You can't chase a number. You can't tell somebody, oh, your elbows are 27 degrees. We need to get it to 34. Can you do that for me? No, it doesn't work like that. It doesn't work like that, you know. So the more people understand not only the power that it has, that player development has, but like what it actually means and how you can get guys to perform better, like the results are, you know, or can be nuts, you know, they can just be like amazing. I mean, we've seen guys, we saw one guy in 3 months go from 88 to 90 to 97 getting on the draft board. We saw another guy in an offseason go from a 5 ERA and the next year had a 0 ERA for his first 30 innings and jumped two levels, like finished with like a 1.12 or something like that. Like the results that are there for everyone has the ability to get better. Player development is real, right? It was always this, mythical thing, but now we can quantify it, right? But quantifying it needs to not be based on the results in the lab. It needs to be based on the results on the field. Like Cort was getting biomechanical testing in the spring and, he thought he was perfect, right? But he wasn't. He wasn't perfect. He was missing fastballs down the middle he knew were coming and fouling them off and swinging and missing. Like, and he knew it was off. He knew it was off. He just didn't know what to do to make it right. And as the game goes forward, the more coaches that really buy into it, like, God, man, whether you're a team coach, a hitting guy, a pitching guy, the rewards at the end of that are just amazing. They're amazing. And when you think about what a guy really has to do, right, to change his entire life or his entire season, like, we're talking small percentages, right? Like, in a big league season, if you get 500 ABs, and you see 4 pitches per plate appearance, you're seeing 2,000 pitches. If you get 2 swings per at bat on average, because sometimes it's one or none, sometimes it's 3 or 4, right? You're getting 1,000 swings at 2,000 pitches. The difference between 15 jacks and 30 is 15 individual moments in time, right? The difference between a 15-15 season and a 30-30 season is 30 individual moments in time. And for a lot of these guys, like you look at Cort, if you look at his swings throughout his career, on the good results, the better movements were happening. They were there. It's just about getting them to show up on a more regular basis. For some guys, it's not even completely overhauling. It's just altering a little bit or giving them a feel to get the good stuff to happen more often.
You can just see like how exciting this whole player development process is. Like, hey, if you have someone that understands all of this, or a majority of it, and can actually put it into play and turn around and make an organization $50 million through player development. Like, it's the value of a good coach or whatever term you want to call it is about to increase immensely because we're actually seeing this happen.
Yes. And 50 million is a very,
modest,
that's a very, it's a modest, modest and small number. If you look at, one of the most brilliant hitting guys I've ever been around, we started talking, we connected about 4 years ago, and we've been collaborating on stuff ever since. Donnie Ecker. And, he's bright, he's open-minded, he's always searching and looking. And, if you look at what's happened in the last 2 years, since he's had the opportunity to, to kind of do his thing, the results he's had in professional baseball in season are, insane. And if you look at just this year alone, he's now the assistant big league hitter. He went from being a low A hitting coach at the Cardinals, and he decided not to go back and ended up with the Angels, and he was a triple A hitting coach. They set records in the Angels organization for the Salt Lake Bees for all time, like home runs, RBIs, like 8 guys had career years. Like, that's not an accident. And then he gets hired to go be the assistant big league guy with the Reds. And like, if you look at the results that are being produced by some of the guys that he's working with, and you look at even somebody like Aquino, like, the results with Aquino are insane, right? Like, he spent 2 weeks with him in the spring, and there were people that said, don't bother, he's been in the organization, 9 years, and it's not there. And then all of a sudden, right, the guy's worth a 1.9 WAR and $24 million, and he's one of the biggest monsters in professional baseball. Like, that's real. Like, that happens, and that'll happen way more once everybody kind of continues to get on board with this and figure out how to get guys to move better.
Yeah, it's exciting stuff. What's a common thought or perception that you think is completely false or wrong? The majority says it's this way, and you're like, BS. No, it's not.
I think having an intent-based approach is completely misunderstood. I think the word intent is designed to mean with purpose, and everybody thinks that if you just try to hit and throw the ball harder, that you're automatically going to produce better results. And I think that is a very poor understanding of how to create better results, and I think it's extremely misunderstood. And all the old school guys that said, you know, slow is smooth, smooth is fast, be easy to create your best result. I had a way better understanding of what the best do better than everyone else. You know, when you think about it, the best players in the world, man, they make it look easier than everybody else, not harder, right? Not harder. They make it look easier than everybody else. And how they're producing force is through a different system. They're not creating compensations. They're efficient, and that's why they make it look easier. And when you just try to swing and throw harder, sometimes you can create tremendous compensatory movements that at first for some guys can seem better, and for some guys it can help them 100%. But a lot of guys, it hurts them. A lot of guys, it hurts them. I think mobility is another huge factor, a very huge misunderstanding of mobility and mobility programs and what they're for. And I think we're going to see a huge shift in that here soon, because the lack of understanding leads to more injuries than health.
I think that was a fantastic answer, first off, but I think you're spot on with that second part too. I mean, like me personally, I can get more mobility in someone's shoulder by working on stability exercises than stretching them. Like 10 times out of 10, it's that way. Okay, 9.99% or 9.99 times out of 10, it's that way. But yeah, that's spot on. That's really well put. I'm going to say a few words. I want you to tell me what they mean to you. Fascia.
Wow, we're just going heavy, dude. You're just going after it. Well, you and I have talked about this a lot. Here's the thing, like, research is always going to be so much farther ahead of where a common understanding is. And, you know, if you look at, Donald Ingber's work from Harvard University, and you look at, the concept of tensegrity, that biotensegrity that Stephen Levin and then Buckminster Fuller came up with, and you understand the fact that, like, it's been proven that every cell in the human body is a tensegrity model. Like, Donald Ingber from Harvard proved that. Once you understand biotensegrity, you understand the role that the fascia to some degree is going to play in movement. Like, you know, when people talk about the kinetic chain or that there is no the actual chain, the only thing that we have in our body that's connecting everything is the fascia, right? So everything that's getting produced is happening in accordance with and in conjunction with the way that the fascia is interplaying throughout the human body. It envelops everything. It envelops everything. It surrounds the entire body like a skin that's kind of like a rubber band or a trampoline covering that's like intertwined and connected to everything inside of it. And, you know, our ability to produce force, that fascia has a lot to do with it, because when we're transferring energy, you know, like my glutes are not directly connected to my pecs, right? Or my arms, except through the fascia. So when we're transferring that energy and that force, it has to travel, you know, through somewhere. And, you know, you and I have talked about it a lot. Like, what we don't know is whether the fascia, like how much the fascia is responsible for producing the force, or if it's that the fascia is pulling on all of the muscles at the same time to hold on to them, to use them. So it's allowing the body to use all of the muscles in an integrated way at the best, you know, timing and sequencing possible. Like, there's still unknowns, but we know how real it is, and we know how important it is. And when you look at the research and what's being done, like, you know, the people at the forefront will tell you that, before they thought fascia was nothing, and now they literally believe it's everything. And, you know, Ingber at Harvard, I mean, that guy has I don't know, 450 publications, 150 patents, five companies. Like, the guy's literally curing cancer, and he's doing it with the understanding of the human body as a tensegrity model, and fascia is a huge part of that.
Yeah, no, we definitely know that fascia preloads to tension. It's, you know, or preloads to muscle contraction. We don't really know if it's a main driver in muscle contraction. But along the other lines, like there's so much, like you said, we don't know that's still going on. Is it a neuroprotective response? Is it actually a force generator, or is it just really a good force transfer, like a conduit, right? We're not positive to this point yet. But if people want to do more research on that, the Fascial Plastination Project, they're kind of like the forefront in fascia research right now. So that's something you
can
do.
Yeah, and you could look at the World Fascia Congress.
Yep.
You can look on there as well. There's tons of continued research, but I would highly encourage anyone, just look into biotensegrity, man. Look into biotensegrity, because just understanding that, like, look, I don't have to know how it's actually happening or where the force is coming from, but I know for a fact that looking at the human body as a biotensegrity model and understanding it in that way has made my life way easier as a coach. And, you know, you can diagnose things looking at them from more of an integrated system, and you don't get lost, in the trees and miss the forest, right? Like, you're seeing it as a whole, and it allows you to understand, like, how to get guys to produce more force more efficiently and more consistently.
Yeah.
How it's actually the intertwining of what's actually happening, we'll find out more as it comes out. But it's powerful.
It is. It really is. All right, let's talk a little bit about a couple things that you're involved in. Your event, Bridge the Gap. So I've gotten the privilege and honor to speak the last couple of years. It's always a great event. Awesome, you know, presenters, awesome people to talk with that are in attendance. Tell me a little bit more about that.
Well, we call it Bridge the Gap because that's exactly the purpose. You know, it's trying to bridge the gap of information for coaches and players between the old and the new. So we started it 3 years ago, and, you know, it's gotten better every year. And I've had some just brilliant speakers and, great, great people willing to come in and share information with, coaches coming in from all over, and, just trying to get a great group of guys together with brilliant minds, sharing information for the betterment of the game, trying to, give everybody the opportunity to dig into, where everybody's heads are at, and, kind of help the game progress and push forward.
Yeah. And now your book, Old School versus New School, it's been out, 2 months now, 3 months?
Yeah, a couple months. Believe it or not, done very well. Knock on wood, haven't had any bad reviews yet, which is probably the most amazing thing to me, because baseball, that's a lot of opinions. It's the same purpose. It's trying to bridge the gap between the old and the new. I sat down after the pro off season this last year and locked myself in the office, and just pretty much wrote for 16 hours a day, and pumped that thing out, man.
Now,
it done by May, and it was out by the end of June.
Didn't you tell me a story about you were up in bed, you were a little bedridden, and you got an opportunity to write a whole bunch?
Yeah. I ended up I was sick for like 8 days. And, had the, I was sitting at home and, started, it was a lot of, late nights sitting there on the computer, cause my mind was racing, cause I couldn't do anything all day, and, started writing some stuff down. And then, was looking into a bunch of the other stuff, and, I had it in my head to eventually write a book. And at the time it just dawned on me that it made the most sense to do it now. So I kind of burned the ships on it, and just went, for anybody that doesn't know that term, it's one of my favorite ones. It's a military term. If you want to win a war, when you pull up on the island, you burn the ships behind you, and you leave yourself no way out. you know, and you just find a way to get it done. And, you know, I knew that by June, when the college summer program hit, there was going to be no time to write or to do anything. And I felt very strongly at that point in time that I needed to write it and get it done, had the hankering to do it. And, yeah, it was funny cause I called a couple of, editors or ghostwriters and, you know, had a couple initial conversations with them. And I was like, yeah, I was like, so I want to get it out by June. And they were like, June 2020, that shouldn't be a problem. You have like a year and a half. I was like, no, you know, like I'm getting it out by June. And, you know, they didn't return my calls. Probably thought I was insane. But the thing is, the book was kind of already, was already written, you know, it was in my head. I just needed to put it all down on paper and get it organized. So,
yeah, I've got the privilege to, you know, read it before it went out in publication, which is awesome. I appreciate that. And to kind of review it for you. I've had people in my area, I don't know, that knew that we were associated in any way, say, hey, have you read this book? It's fascinating. I could not put it down. And I'm like, yeah, I have. It is pretty good. I know that guy. He's crazy. He doesn't sleep.
Yeah. Well, I tried to, and I appreciate you, you know, looking at it early. You know, I tried to get it to a couple of people that I respected and trusted and, you know, get some thoughts on it, you know, because it's always interesting putting something like that out. I've always kind of written stuff down, just never, you know, put anything out like that. And, you know, I tried to make it so that it was informative and somebody from every sector of the game could get something out of it. And I wanted to introduce topics, but not go so deep that anybody got lost in it. You know, I felt like that was really important to kind of, you know, keep it engaging and just let people know that, you know, the old school guys, like, you weren't wrong. The new school guys, you were not completely correct, and present some stuff that might be interesting to everybody and, you know, across the game.
Well, I think it was very good. So, all right, man, we're about out of time. We better land this plane. Give me a snippet. Give me a little piece of or a teaser. What will your presentation be about for or at the World Pitching Congress?
We're going to talk about what it means to, you know, the injury thing is bad, dude. And we, you know, we need to start figuring this thing out. And, you know, we're doing some interesting things on the rehab side. And, you know, we're going to present some rehab programs that we've been running and some interesting things that we've been seeing there and how we believe rehab programs can be done considerably more effectively and at a better rate. And we're going to present some stuff likely on the arm and how the body moves that hopefully will have a big impact.
Oh, man, I am excited for that. I've heard a majority of what the presentations are going to be so far, and they are going to be phenomenal. So that one sounds just as good as all the other ones, if not right up there with the best. So I'm pumped to hear it, pumped to hear more about what's going on. Any last things you want to get off your chest or out to the world before we get off here?
Just keep figuring it out. Keep figuring it out. Everybody needs to keep figuring it out. Ask more questions, find more answers, you know, open up your mind and, you know, challenge. Just because something makes sense initially doesn't mean that it's fully understood, you know, and there's too much of that right now. Too much full reliance on tech to provide answers rather than seeing it as just another tool in the toolbox.
Very well said. Nice chatting, Eugene.
Thanks, brother. Pleasure as always.
Yeah, so we get to hear more of Eugene Bleeker here in January 17th through 19th, 2020 at the World Pitching Congress. He's going to bring a ton of energy. I look forward to it. I'll see you, buddy.
Same here, man. All right, brother.
Tell everybody at 108 hi for
me.
Yep. And that's Eugene Bleeker, everybody. You can get his book, Old School versus New School, on Amazon or on the 108 Performance website. You can check out their stuff on Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, on their website as well. They got a lot of cool things coming down the pipeline. Or you can hear from him in person and speak to him in person at the World Pitching Congress, January 17th through 19th, 2020, here in St. Louis, Missouri. See you there. If you're a player or coach and you're looking for a more efficient way to warm up, check out our free dynamic warm-up ebook. This warm-up consists of evidence-based movements revolved around neuromuscular stability and fascial slings. You can download it off of our website or just go to the Gestalt Performance Twitter page and follow the link.